Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak to Tanisha Fordham, writer and director of the play 12 Mo Angry Men at Ujima Company in Buffalo. The play runs from December 1st through the 17th at the Lorna C. Hill Theater. Tickets are available at ujimacoinc.org. That's ujimacoinc.org. Ujima Company is a multi-ethnic and multicultural professional theater whose primary purpose is the preservation, perpetuation, and performance of African-American theater by providing working opportunities for established artists and training experiences for aspiring artists. Tanisha and I had a fantastic and wide-ranging conversation about her beginnings in Buffalo, her work on Broadway, the inspiration for her play 12 Mo Angry Men, which was inspired by the Reginald Rose play 12 Angry Men, the audience's reaction to her play, and her dreams for the future. I really enjoyed talking to Tanisha, and I was happily surprised to see that our conversation almost doubled the length of many of our recent episodes. Now, if you notice a difference in my audio, I was traveling and had to use different equipment than I normally do. Luckily, Tanisha sounds fantastic, and I know you will enjoy the episode. Tanisha, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm feeling really excited. Pretty good. Yeah.
Awesome. Fantastic. Are you from Buffalo originally?
Yeah, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. I actually live or Tonawanda, but yeah, I'm originally from Buffalo.
Awesome. Great. Is there a story from your youth that connects to what you do now?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's so many stories from my youth that connect to what I do. Like I said, I was born and raised in Tonawanda. I was a church kid. I'm still very much a church girl, but growing up, you know, I kind of spent a lot of my time in church with my mom. My mom sang with the group. My grandmother directed one of the like young children's choirs. My grandfather worked inside the church. So there was a lot of kind of like performing at important church holidays, whether that was like doing the Easter production. One of the funniest memories is the very first kind of speech that I did, Easter speech, was I was like 2 years old and I got up there and my mom said she was so nervous. The speech was, "What are you looking at me so funny for? I didn't come to stay. I just came to say that today is Easter Day." And it's like, who knew all those years ago that that practice would be put to use? So that, and then also at Sacred Heart, which is where I went to Buffalo Academy at Sacred Heart for high school, there wasn't a huge Black or African-American population at the time, and there were no Black teachers. But it was very important to me. My grandfather was a professor at Buff State College. He's on the Freedom Wall in Buffalo. So just being so impactful, particularly as relates to preserving African-American history, it was really important to me that there was representation of like the African-American experience. And so when Black History Month came, I asked the principal, could we do a Black History Month program? There really wasn't anyone to facilitate it because there weren't any teachers, I think, who felt culturally capable to like lead us. So the principal was like, if you want to lead it, if you want to direct it, then you can do that. And we'll have a staff member stay after school with you. So that was my first time directing. That was my sophomore year in high school. And I directed the Black History Month program. So those are the two things that come to mind.
Wow. Well, that really speaks to, I mean, think who you are now, right? Because you are a multi-hyphenate artist of writer, director. Do you perform as well?
Yeah, I do a lot of performing. I'm always really thankful to perform. I started as a performer. I went to college in Greensboro, North Carolina. I went to a Black college at HBCU. North Carolina A&T was the school that I graduated from. Aggie Pride, you know, had to do that. Yeah. In college, I got to do all this like really cool stuff. Pretty Fire, Dream Girls. We did a Christmas production, which I'm forgetting the name of, but it's a really famous, well-known production by Langston Hughes. Oh, the Black Nativity. Graduating from college, I think I had been kind of taken such good care of in college because we got to really dig into like really strong, powerful Black pieces. But then when I graduated and I was auditioning for things, I would getting cast for a lot of like kind of very stereotypical roles where, you know, I'm cursing, or I have a history of drug abuse, or I'm a single mother, or I'm a video vixen. Those were the things that I was getting cast to do. And I would never do, I would always turn them down, like, oh, well, you know, thanks so much for the offer, but I'm not going to do it. And that's actually what propelled me or compelled me to write and direct, was that I just felt these are not the Black people I know. I mean, and it's not to say that that is not a part of the Black experience. It's a part of the human experience. There are human beings who are addicted to drugs. There are human beings. So it's certainly a part of the Black human experience, but I felt troubled by the fact that that was the only representation that I was seeing. And I felt convicted and compelled to, like, well, I can't do anything about it if I'm only ever auditioning. So let me start writing.
And what was the first piece you wrote?
Oh my gosh. Well, the first piece that I wrote was actually this piece called Needle. I've never done it, but my husband and I actually read it like a couple of months ago. And it was actually you know, have you ever like looked at something of yourself from like eons ago and you're just like, God, I was so green and young. It was just so many like plot holes. The characters weren't developed, but the piece was just, the long and short of it is that there were people who were like putting needles on like the gas pumps and infecting people with different diseases. And there was a girl who got infected with a disease as a result of this. And she found the person who did it to her. And it was like this story of like forgiveness and redemption, like how the person's life was redeemed who was doing this to people. He was a part of a gang. He was doing it for like gang related things. And how she, even though she ended up actually dying from the disease, how she like was on this like journey towards forgiveness. So, I mean, we never did it. And it's like so many questions, like, are people putting needles under gas pumps? But you know, it was cool and it stretched me. It was the first thing that I did. And it's part of who I am now.
I think so many of those pieces though too, right? Like it's so important just to like start creating something or getting it done, or even if it never gets done, even if it stays in the drawer, the first one always leads to the next one, which leads to the next one, which then just keeps opening doors. You can't think your way into being a better artist. You have to do the stuff to get a better artist. And sometimes, listen, some of my early podcasts were gnarly, right? When I look back, I'm like, ooh, what was I asking?
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, but there's something beautiful for that, right? Like I think that it's just great to revisit it and also to recognize sometimes how far maybe we've grown, right? Because like you got to start somewhere and you're certainly somewhere else now.
Yeah, thanks.
How does directing work inform your writing, or how does your writing inform your directing, or vice versa?
So, you know what? It's so funny. One thing that I will say that is maybe a gift and a strength, but is also, I'm sure some people might say that it's also maybe a weakness or a challenge that I have to face as a director or an artist. I really do not study. And I know people are like, gasp, like, you know what I'm saying? But I'm just being truthful. That's just never been my approach. I'm not like at home binge watching films by my favorite director, or I don't like, even in the Broadway season, like a lot of Broadway directors or writers or whatever, they'll go see everything that's in the theaters during that season, especially if they have a work that's out during that season. They want to see what else they're up against. They want to see how it holds to the art that they're creating. I've never really done that. I know this is going to sound wild, but I don't think I realized that it was so rare that people at the professional level get to write, direct, and produce or perform their pieces. I didn't know that. So I don't really know that I thought of it in terms of how one impacts or informs the other, because I think I always just was kind of like, this is burning inside of me to say. I really don't write anything that's not burning inside of me to say. I mean, so many of the scripts that I've written, 12 Mo is not, this is not the case with 12 Mo, but many of the scripts that I've written in like a day or three, because it was like, I saw something happened, and I was so, there was a palpable feeling about whatever it is that I saw, and I felt like I had to get it out. So I think that I always kind of felt like, clearly I'm going to direct it because no one's going to feel as compelled by the thing as I'm going to feel. And then I often find that even as a performer, again, and not in any way, shape or form, I want to be very clear, not in any way, shape or form in a way that's like, there aren't directors who can do it. Oh, yeah. There are millions of brilliant directors. There are millions of brilliant performers, but even in the audition, a lot of times when I'm auditioning folks for productions, I find myself like, the word needs to be said like this, you know what I'm saying? Which is then
the impetus that makes me decide I'm just going to perform in it. You know, I have to be in the cast because like no one's going to be as geeked or passionate about the thing as I am. So I think that was really more of my road to where that's how one informs the other. It's not necessarily that I approached it thinking like, this is how it is written. This is how, you know, it's all kind of like, I don't know how to separate it. And there have been times, last thing, there have been times where I have turned down people giving me the royalties and like finding another director because of that, because I feel so like, ooh, but I know another director is going to be brilliant in their own way. And they're going to see the text very differently than maybe how I intended to write the text. So
I'm just so interested, right? And there's no one way to make art. And let's be clear about that, right? Like people make it all different ways and it's all great, right? I'm so interested when you go into a rehearsal room, right? Is it like you see the thing in your mind and you're working towards the mind, or do things shift you in the rehearsal room? And I'm just interested. There's no good or bad. I'm just like, gosh, how does that work? Or does it shift or does it change? Or is it just like it arrives and that's the thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am a collaborator. I'm a collaborator, collaborator, collaborator. And I have found and am finding, I shouldn't even just say found, I am finding that I do have to be very intentional about how I am articulating what is the vision. Because I want to be clear, Daniel, I go in and I have a vision. Like, I wish I had my script so I could show it to you, even though I know it's not being seen. But like, my script has like, I mean, literally on both, I print and bind my own scripts and I print a page in between each page, because literally line after line after line, there are thoughts about what this looks like, what this sounds like, what this feels like. Page after page, sometimes I'll print like literally some other reference that I found online of like, this is what the thing should be or whatever the case. But I'm also very interested in like what other people feel based off of the text. I'm always taken aback, flabbergasted by hearing the actors and their interpretation of like, well, this character is this and this character is that. And I'm like, my gosh, I couldn't see that character more differently. And I think a lot of times, particularly because a lot of times the people know that I've written it as well, there are all these questions about like, what did you see this person as, or what did you, and I'm always very cognizant to not give that information until you have very concretely told me what it is that you see. Because I think that that's the beauty of art. My mom is also a writer as well. And I love hearing her talk about how it can be challenging to let go of your baby. You're like holding on to it. It's precious. It meant something very specific to you. And the second you release this writing, it becomes something completely different. And I'm sure it's probably, you know, I'm a new mother. I have a 9-week-old baby boy.
Congratulations. Thank you for making time speaking with us today.
Yeah, thank you. But I'm finding that even right now, like I told my husband, I'm struggling, if I'm fully transparent, with the part of it that's like, he was inside of my womb for 9 months and he went everywhere with me and he only ate the things that I wanted to eat at the times that I wanted to eat them and all of these different things. And like now it can be the smallest thing, but like I hand him off to my mom or hand him off to my husband and they're like, you know, it could be something small, like just patting his back, trying to get a little bubble out, a little gas bubble. And I'm like, you're patting him too hard. But I have to realize that there was the birth and there will continuously be these rebirths. Yep. Based off of who he's with. When he gets to school, he's going to come home one day and say something I think is completely crazy. Yeah. But it's going to be like, he's going to be informed by the world and his friends and his schools. And so I think that's how I like to approach my art and writing, that there is a way that I see it, but mm-hmm. because it's so because the art form of theater making and filmmaking is so collaborative, I like to leave space for all of the rebirthings that might happen based off of something else or some other influence that's happening inside of the room.
I love that. Speaking of things that sort of have kind of maybe taken on a life of their own, you are also being a monthly hyphenate, a published author, and your book, what, EGOT, is that it? Or EGOT?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about your book?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for asking. It's so exciting to be able to talk about that. So when I was doing a company on Broadway as the associate director, that was the first time I had ever done a Broadway production. And I had come from teaching for 13 years inside of various school systems. So I did it at the collegiate level, but these were rising college students. So they were like seniors going into college. And then I mostly was teaching a theater for high school. And so that transition into commercial theater at its highest level was just a huge transition. It was huge in terms of how I looked at and how I understood other people looked at art. I don't think I realized that Broadway is maybe equally parts consideration about the money of it and the finance of it and the reality of how much money you're making back, and equally parts the art. You know what I mean? I don't think I realized that. I think I thought it was like, it's going to be, we're going to do the art and hopefully we make the money. But it's really very much like, we're going to do the art. Is this going to make money? And if it's not, maybe we're going to have to reconsider.
Yeah, sometimes I say to my students, I'm a college professor, right? So sometimes I say to my students, sometimes it's about the show and sometimes it's about the business, because that's why we call it show business, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It has to be considered. Doesn't always mean we have to kind of go that way, but it does have to be considered. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't think I realized that. And so a lot of the kind of new circles that I ended up having opportunity to kind of sit in and be a part of and grow with, there I started feeling very kind of differently about my own self and my own art based off of those circles. Not all of them directly related to the production of Company, because actually the creative team and the cast and all of that of Company, they were wonderful. But just a lot of the people that I found myself interacting with at that, you know, at that point. And so I kind of really had to take a step back and really ask myself what it is that I am trying to accomplish. Because now here I am, like, I'm a baby and I'm like going to see, you know, when I say a baby, like literally like 4 or 5 years old, and I'm going to see Lion King on Broadway. And that's the goal. I'm like, I just want to get to Broadway. I want to write on Broadway. I want to direct on Broadway. I want to perform. That's what I want to do. And now I'm here and I'm finding that maybe in this space, I don't have the autonomy and agency to do what it is that I really want to do. Cause I don't really want to do on Broadway something that's not my heart song, or even worse, Daniel, something that is against my heart song.
Right.
Something that's like, I don't believe in this at all. Like, this message couldn't be more anti what it is that I believe in.
Completely out of alignment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's exactly right. And so that is why I wrote the EGOT. The EGOT is really just an exploration from the time that I'm in elementary school and having many of the same feelings. It's really funny, because just being a Black girl in a predominantly white spaces, basically from K to 12, always having conversations about, you sound funny, Black girls don't sound that way, or your hair, you know, I used to have braids in my hair. And it wasn't until I got to college that I really realized, like, your voice is your magic in all of the spaces, the authenticity of your voice. And so I had to remind myself of that upon arriving to Broadway. And that's what the book is about. The book is about, like, not waiting, because the chance may or may not ever come. I told you, I'm a God girl. And so I really do believe anything is possible. I think that if I'm called to it, I will be it. And still, I leave space for there are millions of brilliant people. And I may not be called to do the thing that I want to do in the place that I want to do it, but I can still do something right now where I am. And that's dope, period. That's enough. You know what I mean? And if what I end up doing is teaching students in an urban community for the next 20 years, if that's what I decide and if that's where my path takes me, I'm going to rock it there. That's going to be my Broadway stage. And that's still Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony worthy. Because the truth of the matter is, some of the most impactful things that we can do, they're not going to get awards. No one's going to cover me in a story about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be nominated for anything. And yet it made the greater or greatest impact. So that's really what the book is about.
Sometimes I talk about my teaching and, you know, just to kind of share a parallel thought, right, is like that. I say that for years, I thought for myself, like, there was so much emphasis on, like, people say, I'm going to make it on Broadway. I'm going to make it on Broadway. And the emphasis is always the space. But if we re-sort of think about that and put the emphasis on the verb, I'm going to make art, our lives can open up in so many new and different and fabulous and fantastic ways.
It's really true. It's really, really true. And I'm thankful for that, just to kind of piggyback off of that. I'm really thankful for that, because it's really helped me, particularly now because of having Sunday as my baby boy's name. So particularly now because of having Sunday, my husband keeps saying, think about what you want your life to be right now, like not 10 years from now, whatever the case may be. What do you want to do? And I just see myself like the EGOT. We actually did a musical version of it last year for the City of Newark for the mayor's office. And then we earlier this year recorded a studio album that will be released at the top of next year. And I just had so much fun in the studio. Some of the people were professionals who I had not worked with before, but a lot of the cast were people who I consider very close friends, so close to me that they're family. That's what I want to do. Like, I want to be in the studio making the dopest thing that I can put together that God drops and inspires me to do in my mind, but I want to do it with like my baby boy and my little Moby on my chest. And I don't know if all spaces are going to allow me to do that, but certainly the spaces that I create, I could do that. Like if I'm the one who produces something, I can do that because I produced it. So Sunday will be in the studio with me bopping with the headphones on, you know what I'm saying? And I'm thankful that I've kind of, to your point, reframed in my mind what it's going to mean or what I hope it will continue to mean to be an artist and a creative at this point in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are so lucky to have you in Buffalo with your upcoming production of 12 Mo' Angry Men. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe like where the play came from or how the inspiration came to you to create this piece?
Absolutely. Yeah. So of course, most people, if not everyone, are familiar with 12 Angry Men by Reginald Rose. And during the pandemic, I was doing a lot of like distance cycling and listening to audiobooks while I was doing it. So I'd be like cycle 60 miles just to like out cycle the angst of like the world is falling apart. Yeah. And so one day I found myself listening to 12 Angry Men and I was struck. I mean, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. How relevant that piece was and is in light of what was happening in the country at that time with the murdering of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and it's just like continuing list of people who have faced all different types of injustices. And so much like I told you, I kind of always do. I always feel like I can't not do anything. And this is what I can do. Like I'm a writer, I'm a director, this is what I can do. And so I wrote in light of that, kind of how I felt that case or deliberation would go if it were happening modern day in Mississippi, a particular part of Mississippi, Jackson. Because of course, what was required in order for this piece to work, where 11 Black jurors and one white juror are deliberating on the guilt or innocence of a white officer who shot and killed a Black teen, what would be necessary is like, why would there be 11 Black jurors? Like where in the United States are we that there are so many Black people on this case? And so I did research about what parts of the country have that dense of a Black population that could potentially realistically happen. And so that's where we landed in Mississippi and then just had an opportunity, kind of pitched it to the mayor's office. And it was perfect timing because the mayor's office in Newark was trying to figure out how they could do programming that summer that wouldn't be indoors because we were still, COVID still was like keeping people outside. And so it was a big enough cast that they felt like, you know, a smaller cast, maybe two people, might've been harder to like keep the attention of people outdoors. Newark didn't want to do classical theater that year. They just thought people just needed something new and edgy and something that would like keep people's minds kind of interested and engaged. And so that was the first time that I had an opportunity to do it. And it was really, really well received in that version of it, in that iteration of it. Listen to this, Daniel. This is crazy.
Yeah.
That iteration of it, we cast the cop as a man and we had a little Black boy and a little Black girl double cast to see how that would impact how people, we actually had audiences vote at the end of the show, whether they thought Officer White was guilty or innocent. And we wanted to see how having like a male officer, but a Black girl or a Black boy, how that would impact how people voted. It was really interesting because it was a predominantly, and in Newark, it was a predominantly Black audience.
Yes.
So it was interesting. You're thinking, at least I'm thinking, maybe you weren't thinking, but I was thinking, he's going to be voted guilty because it's a bunch of Black people and it's a little Black, it's a Black child who got shot. We're going to be on the side of our community.
Mm-hmm.
Not so.
Wow.
Every single show, we had a vote that was split right down the middle. And so it was just really, really interesting. And then to open up the audiences, we also did a talk back after every show to hear the variety of concerns and that's kind of in a lot of ways, that's the point of the piece. Like Black people are not a monolith.
That's it. You know what
I mean? And we all feel differently, just like everybody in humanity feels differently and split on almost every issue that you could bring up. So it was really interesting.
It's also pretty amazing though, too, that you, like as an artist, right, have the bravery, like some artists are like, no one can ever talk. I don't even want to do a talk back. Yeah. And the fact that you were like, audience, please vote on what you're seeing in the piece speaks to really like your incredible bravery as an artist.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really a lot of fun. And I think that if God allows for me to continue to do the production, I think in a perfect world, money allowing and all of the variables allowing, I would really love to do the show with a boy and girl Nazi and a man and woman officer, because I feel that really opens up the conversation. It's so interesting to see how people vote when it's a male officer and a little girl, or a male officer and a little boy, or a woman. We did an off-Broadway run as well, and it was a woman officer and a little girl. And again, so interesting to see how people felt about whether or not this officer was actually in fact like biased or whatever based off the fact that she was a white woman. It was just yes. So very, very interesting. And Reginald Rose's son, Jonathan, came to our Off-Broadway run and said that he felt like it was like honoring the legacy of the work, and his father would have been so, which is always so great to hear, because, you know, original writers of things often feel like things are bastardized when they're taken and like recreated and all of the things. So I really appreciated that.
That's amazing. I have to ask, who's facilitating the talkback? Are you facilitating it? Is someone else facilitating it?
No, someone else is going to facilitate it. They haven't. You mean when we did it in Newark?
Both. Yeah.
I facilitated it, which, you know, I think was best because a lot of the conversation was about the script.
Right.
Much of it wasn't like, you know, of course, the acting is brilliant and they always have questions for actors, but a lot of times the acting questions, I don't know why this is, but a lot of times in performances I've noticed the acting and production questions become actually about the actual creativity or the creation of the thing as opposed to the content. You know what I mean? It's often like, how did you memorize those lines or whatever the case may be? But it was really fascinating to have an opportunity for people to ask me questions. One of the biggest ones that came up at almost every production was the question of, why did I have the officer blacksplaining is the word that people were using. Well, we actually hear the interaction between Nazi and Officer White when Nazi gets killed. And people say that the officer was blacksplaining, but it's actually, the officer was based off of a actual officer. His name is Tommy Norman. He's got a huge following on TikTok, Instagram. And he's this like white officer who polices in somewhere in the South. I don't know what state it is, but it's a completely black neighborhood. And when I tell you, when he drives through the streets of the city, he will get out and walk and the children run to him. Officer Nauman, because he's such a part of their community. He goes to their basketball games and their birthday parties and their engagement parties. And so I always kind of talk to people about even the nuance of that. Like, I don't think the officer was blacksplaining. I think from how I wrote it, I can't tell people how they view it, but from how I intended to write it, it was based off of this officer who very much was a part of the community and probably sounded like the community because he was raised in the community and sounds the same way that the rest of the people from the community sound.
Right. So, and also too, like, I mean, it's also kind of as much about the viewer as it is about kind of the piece itself, right? Where someone is kind of hitting up against what they're seeing and their own expectations of what they think it's going to be. And then kind of having that experience afterwards is also sort of teaching them about where they are or the things that they're bringing into the theater.
Yeah, it's so good. I just love it so much. It's such a joy to be a part of and to see how every facet, to your point, every facet of it just makes it something so different. I'm interested to see how audiences in Buffalo respond. I'm really interested. And I'm interested because I know that the demographic of patrons at UGMA is different than who we've done it for up to this point. So I'm really interested to see how it's received.
Me too. Can you tell us a little bit how the collaboration with UGMA came about?
Yes. So I always kind of send out cold messages to folks showing work, showing clips of work, news articles, blah, 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 theaters that I really would love to collaborate or, you know, places that I would. So that's what happened when we had all of our kind of reviews and press and all that kind of thing from Jersey and from our Off-Broadway run. I sent it to UGMA at the time. There were a lot of transitions going on at the space at the time. And so I didn't hear back until earlier this year, like at the top of this year. And I think I sent it in 2021, but it was actually perfect timing because the show that I was doing on Broadway had just closed and I knew I was pregnant and would probably be about 6 to 7 weeks postpartum at the time. So it just felt like a perfect collaboration. But it was upon talking to Miss Sarah more closely that I found out that yes, she saw the piece and yes, she read the script and she did all of the things that they do to vet people when they're, you know, putting pieces together. But she was in my grandfather's class when he taught at Buff State, when she was in college. And she just has been very, very gracious in saying that like my grandfather was one of her favorite professors. And I just think there's something that is so poetic about that, even as relates to the creation of the piece, because I think at the heart of it, the creation of the piece is about community. Mm-hmm. It's about how we show up for each other in community or how we don't show up for each other in community. It's about an opportunity to bring people who may not be a part of the community into the fold and what that would do to, I think, heal some of these very like toxic repeating cycles, how we're not going to be able to heal as a world and as a nation without being able to see the humanity in folks first and foremost. And that doesn't mean that we don't still have questions, or that we still don't agree, or that we still, you know, but that we have to stop and take a second to see, like, the person that I'm having a conversation with feels viscerally about whatever they feel that thing about, as I do. Like, because when I come in a conversation, there's this righteous indignation, like, you know, because I'm upset or I'm passionate or it's my people. But like, on the other side of the conversation is someone who feels the exact same way. And so I feel like it's poetic that one of the reasons why Miss Sarah really stopped and looked at the piece is because she felt my grandfather treated her in a humane way. And that, yes, she learned a lot of things at Buff State, but one of the things that like planted deep down in her was the professor that just loved her. And I'm sure he taught her lots of things, but I'm sure that it was the love that he had for her and the students at Buff State that resonated. And so I think it's so precious that that's how it came to be.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, I can't wait to see it. I know we're sort of at the end of our interview. I have one more question, and then I would like to turn it back and just see if there's anything you feel left unsaid. But I'm so interested. You're such an incredible multi-hyphenate artist doing so many things. What's next? What are your hopes for the future, for the play, and for you potentially being a future EGOT winner yourself?
Oh, thanks, Daniel. Well, let me tell you, this is honestly from the bottom of my heart. I am so thankful, because I've kind of had many times where I've kind of made a pivot. You know what I mean? And not a full pivot, but I would say just a slight little, we're going to turn to the right, a little return to the left. And I've had a tremendous amount of really dope experiences. Like, I was Mrs. New Jersey United States in 2018. Which is like, that's what I'm sharing that just because it's so random, and competed in the Mrs. United States pageant. Like, what?
That's for you.
Random things.
Yeah.
I was a co-producer on a film in 2018 that got an Oscar nomination. Yeah. And then in 2021, I got to do Company, which won 5 Tony Awards. The Oscar nomination was for Best Short Narrative, but really that's the director's award. You know what I mean? Even though it's the whole team that came together. And then same thing with the Tonys. We got Best Musical, Best Direction, the actors won Best Scenic Design, I think. But I feel like God kind of did that early in my career, because it's kind of like, I don't know if I think that means anything for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think that really the answer to that question is like, I just want to be completely dry of all the juice when it's all said and done. You know what I mean? I have so many things that I want to say, so many raps that I want to rap. I have so many books that I want to write. I have so many plays that I feel like need to be written. There's so many things that I'm looking out in the world and I'm like, I haven't heard this particular thing said this particular way. And I have to say it. I have to say it so that it can at least be said that it was said. And even if only 20 people hear me say it, right? If I go to, like, I went to Sacred Heart and spoke a few weeks ago when I first got here, 400 girls in an auditorium, you know what I mean? But those 400 girls got to hear the thing that I felt I need to say that day, that was laid on my heart that day. And so I really honestly think that that's the biggest thing for me right now. I'm really kind of reshaping and reframing. I have some offers for 2024 to do different various productions. And most of them are at a level that I'm proud to be in the room to have conversations about right now. You know what I mean? But
it's earned. Yes.
Thank you. But I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I'll say yes. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'll say yes, because I don't want to do anything that doesn't feel like it's going to address the thing that is the most important thing right now. This world has got to be better. Now that I have a son, I see what's at stake. It's always been super valuable to me, but now I see this is what's at stake. The next generation is counting on us to put what is important first, and not worry about followers on Instagram, money, and not worry about people are going to, like, if I say to somebody, I self-published a book, right? Are people going to be as impressed with that as they are going to be if I say I'm directing on Broadway? Maybe, maybe not. But I can't be more concerned about that than saying the thing that needs to be said. And right. So that's what I'm really excited about doing. I'm really excited about saying all of the things that need to be said for as long as I have the opportunity to do so. I'm, like I told you, I'm releasing an album at the top of the year. It's from the EGOT. It's basically, we adapted the EGOT into a musical. The studio album of that musical will be released between January and June of next year. And then I'm also releasing a book that's a children's book. and a film that's called Go Black Boy Fly. It was written for a student of mine who was headed to college on a full ride scholarship, top of his class. And then he got a really terrible disease called transverse myelitis. It paralyzed him from his shoulders down. And then about 3 years after he got the disease, his name is Nathaniel Boone. I always like to speak his name. Maybe about 3 years after he got the disease, he died. And so that book, I wrote it while he was alive, and I sent it to him and published it, and you know, had a release of it and all the things. But we turned it into a film. It's just about Black boys being okay with being in their joy, because I think the world tells Black boys that there are a lot of things, especially, you know, that I have a son. I think the world tells Black boys that they got to be hard, they got to be tough, and you know, that they've got physically attractive, but not thinking about like their minds and their souls, and that they deserve to like play on playgrounds and blow little balloons.
Yeah, and be able to be silly and be able to have fun, and be able to laugh. Yeah,
that's right. Yes. And so that's what the narrative film is about, and that will also be released last year. So those are the, I think, like kind of some of the specific projects that I'm working on. But Tanisha Fordham Productions, that's what I do everything through.
Awesome. Great. Well, listen, those are my questions. Thank you so much for your time. I always like to end an interview by asking, is there anything that you feel left unsaid? Anything you want to share with our listeners? Anything? And if the answer is no, that's totally fine. But I always like to just sort of turn it back and say, is there anything we missed?
No. I do really want to just thank my mom, my husband, my grandparents, my son, you know, the community at large. I stand as a result. I know a lot of people say on the backs, but I don't want to stand on anybody's back, because I feel like then you're pushing those people down. But I stand with a lot of clarity that so many people had to like fight on my behalf, had to show up, had to make sacrifices. I'm realizing those sacrifices now more than ever. Like, you know, it's not easy when people, even in like rooms and being in creative spaces, you would like to believe and hope that everyone will be compassionate and kind and loving because we're artists, but that's not always the case. You know, sometimes we're not kind to each other. Sometimes we don't show up for each other in spaces. And it's a task for me. If I'm very honest with you, Daniel, it's a task to still show up as the best version of myself. And so I look back at like my grandmother, my grandfather, my mom, and I think of like the world that they had to face and still be kind and decent and upright. Like, my goodness gracious. So I'm just thankful for all of those people who stood in the gap for me so that I could soar now, so that I could be out here just whatever I want to do. Like, oh, I want to write a film. It's like, I can write a film. And there are other Black women ahead of me who have already done it. There are other moms who have done it. I'm really thankful for them. And then the very last thing I want to say is, 'tis one life will soon be passed. Only what you do for Christ will last. I deeply believe that. And I know we're very diverse world as relates to beliefs. Whatever you believe in, whatever people deeply believe in, I encourage people to only do things for that reason, whatever that is for you, because this other stuff is fading away. The Instagram followers, the fame, the money, even this is such an opportunity, and I'm so thankful to be doing it. There are millions of people around the world who don't know who Tanisha Fordham is, who don't care. And that's okay with me, because I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for God. So I'm okay with, don't worry about me. Worry about what it is that we're trying to accomplish together. And so I encourage people to do that for themselves as well, to not be so involved in self and invested in self, but to figure out how we can do something that will reverberate far beyond the days that when we are no longer here.
Thank you so much for your time today. And again, with a new baby, thank you for making time to chat with us. I really appreciate it. It was so extraordinary talking with you. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you. All right, thank you. Much.
Awesome to meet you. I look forward to seeing the show. Take care. Well, that's our episode. I feel like I could have talked to Tanisha all day. I'm looking forward to seeing 12 Mo Angry Men, and I hope you are too. It runs from December 1st through the 17th at the Lorna Seahill Theater in Buffalo. Tickets are available at ujimacoinc.org. That's ujimacoinc.org. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more episodes where we will explore our local creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmacher engineered this episode. In addition to our podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly at buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.